Not unusual for me, actually. I do have. I am a lounge suit fetishist. One of the reasons there's an absence of classical work in my CV is that I don't. I'm not really prepared to operate in those kind of trousers. Shakespeare, forget about it. And I used to joke about that, but it's in fact true. It's the reason why I have no interest in the performing of Shakespeare. I realise that he's the greatest poet the world has ever known. But I'm not going to wear a doublet and hose for anybody. And I can't really take myself seriously. It's true. I don't want to appear in public in those kind of clothes. I really don't. I refuse. I only want to do... That's why I only do modern work.
You're more comfortable appearing naked than in those clothes?
Well, occasionally it has, as you point out. It's been required to appear in public with nothing on, but only for large amounts of money. And mostly a long time ago, apart from one notable exception. And it must be over by now. I keep thinking that has to be over. And then Love Actually came along and I had to appear. But I did have a guitar, and I was wearing boots. But it'll never happen again.
I always thought, personal opinion, that I feel that your Pirates of the Caribbean performance is extremely expressive. And I really love your acting, and people right away would say, well, that wasn't a performance. That was basically the CG, and he just stood there and did it. You know. But I felt a very, very vivid feelings, emotions, shifts in mood. I thought it was really great.
Well, thank you. It's a credit to the guys at ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, who generated the creature. I am technophobic and know nothing about anything, and they always assured me that whatever I did on the set, they would attempt to translate into the creature, and I always knew that they meant well, but I didn't think, I wasn't absolutely confident that it was technologically possible. But it turned out, and when I saw it, I was quite moved, actually, that somebody had sat at a computer thing, and you know, and every time I did a sort of lip mouth pop or a snort or a, you know, or some crazy stupid thing with my mouth, they actually, you know, they had put it on the screen, and it and I think, you know, they give me all the credit, and I give them all the credit. And I think it's somewhere right between the two. And I hope they get every prize in town, because I think they deserve it.
I mean, even the point of getting your eyes just so,
yeah,
that was really
it's incredible. It's quite incredible. And if you see the DVD and see what I in fact looked like on the set, which was very sad, because I had to wear very lame-looking computer pajamas with white bubbles over, and white dots all over my face, and a little skull cap, which was arguably the worst bit, with a white bubble on the top. I mean, you know, and a pair of trainers for which I'm far too old, and bubbles on the trainers, you know. I mean, now play, you know, then they show you a picture of this, you know, incredible, fantastical creature who's supposed to be the most dangerous and scary thing on the ocean waves, and then, you know. So I was quite, you know, proud of myself finally that I got through the first week. I just said my fee over and over and over again. On the first day, that's exactly, I went around the back of the set. I was so lonely, you know, and this stuff, you know. There's Johnny Depp, who is arguably, you know, along with Orlando Bloom, the most beautiful men in the world, you know. And it's bad enough standing, being around them anyway, you know what I mean? Leave alone when you look like somebody who didn't make it into Devo. And I actually did honestly go around the back of the set, and I just said my fee over and over again in my mind, because it was all I had left. My dignity I left somewhere in the wardrobe.
So given what you've just said, you really do seem keyed on the whole wardrobe thing.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine me now, you know, without, talk about a lounge suit. I had, you know, dodgy, you know, tracksuit. You know, I would never be seen dead in any kind of sportswear. Do you know what I mean? I always feel embarrassed on people's behalf when they wear kind of, you know, anything relating to physical exercise as a kind of regular garment. I always get depressed when that happens. Certain people can pull it off, you know, but no, I certainly wouldn't be one of them.
I've been part of the chorus saying that I think that your performance in the Vertigo Hour is the best thing I've ever seen you do, and I understand it's a limited run, but is it going to go elsewhere? Is there any chance for people to see you in that, even in film or in any way, shape, or form?
There are no plans for it at the moment. At the moment, it's a run that ends on April the 1st, and that would be the end of this production. There will almost certainly, I would think, be further productions. Certainly, I would imagine, in London. I don't see that would involve me, you know, or Julianne. So get there before April 1st, if you wish. Thank you very much for what you say.
Something like Pirates of the Caribbean, which is one of the most successful films just about ever, and now the DVD is duplicating its success. Is that,
yeah.
How does that impact your career specifically?
I don't know how it impacts my career. I really don't.
Notice no change.
Well, I mean, I don't ever get to hear about anything until something happens. I suppose in retrospect, I'll find out how it does. I mean, it's obviously a wonderful thing. I had no idea that I was going to be in the most lucrative film so far in the history of movies. There wasn't some strategy, right? You know what I mean? I just took the gig because it looked like it would be fun, and I didn't really understand the process when I took the gig. Otherwise, I might not have taken it. But there were such classy people involved, and it was a big, really cool script. They're great writers. Terry and Ted are brilliant writers, and the third one is very, very witty and funny and stupid and silly and daft, mad, nuts. And I love it, And I do quite like collecting weirdos. I have been a zombie and a vampire and now I'm a squid. So, there's something about it. And there aren't many people that can construct that sentence. Do you know what I mean? Honestly, about themselves.
Sorry to mention this film.
No, go ahead.
What has gone on in this marriage from your character's perspective? Do you have any sense of whether or not your character has contributed to it, or is it all Sheba?
Well, the consensus on the set between the writer and actors and director was that the idea was to present the marriage as not a part of the problem, that it would be more interesting and more shocking if Sheba's recklessness was not attributable to any kind of lack in her domestic situation. That's what we attempted to do. So the family scenes are an attempt to describe a happy household, as averagely happy as households are. And that it wasn't in response to some great disappointment at home that she started to have this kind of incredibly dangerous, ill-advised sexual affair with a minor.
I read the book four or five years ago, and I thought that her character was a bit more of someone who... a bit nastier to Sheba.
Well, you only get that. You see, because it's told, yes, I believe that's the case. And that may have been, I don't know, because I haven't discussed it with Patrick. But, Patrick says that he wrote it kind of unsympathetically, and or at least somebody just told me this. Patrick didn't tell me this. I just heard this from one of your colleagues in another room, that he complained. No, he didn't complain. But he said that he'd written it rather, unsympathetically, and that I'd played it, but then when I played it, it became more sympathetic. I don't know. But I know that in the book, it's Barbara's perspective. So you have to liberate all of the characters from her perspective, because she is, to put it mildly, an unreliable witness, particularly about Sheba, obviously, and definitely about me. And she's a snob, and she's outclassed technically as a snob in our household, because, in English terms, we, outrank her. It's all bonkers, but that's what she brings to the table. It's not what my character or Sheba brings to the table. So it would infuriate her, and therefore she's not. You can't go to her for any hard information about any of the people that she comes with, Sheba or Richard. That's it. I can't remember the question now. Does that answer the question? Okay.
Well, I know a lot of women who have been in marriages who have left them and gone with women and decided if they're gay. And what you're saying is interesting, because most of them don't blame their husbands. At least they haven't. Well, I've asked them about it. They said, no, he was great. It's not his fault. And it's just there was another part of them that drew them to women. But the husbands, on the other hand, and I'm thinking of a couple of people, had an awful hard time dealing with this, no matter how much they said, it's not your fault. sure. they think it is.
No, I'm sure. But previously I was referring to her affair with the boy rather than...
Oh, there were so many aspects to Sheba and this.
Yeah, no, quite. But yeah, no, I can't imagine that it would be attributable to the, you know, I don't think, you know, it doesn't make any sense, it's not logical, it doesn't make any sense that it should be, that to, if you were to, you know, leave a man to live with a woman, that it would be in some way, the man would in some way be responsible. I don't see how that would work. I don't see the logic. You know what I mean? It can't be true.
Having gone through the whole process of acting this role, how do you attribute Sheba's recklessness?
I don't. It's mysterious to me. Do you have any ideas? I don't know why people would do something, because it's, you know, it's so terrible. It's you know, it's one of the very few things from which there is no redemption. Her family is now cursed forever. Her children's lives are destroyed.
I was saying
her grandchildren's lives will be touched by this.
Have you never done anything reckless in your life?
I've never had an affair with a minor that would render my life and my family beyond redemption. Reckless? What do you mean? I mean, reckless. Yeah, I guess. I played it in traffic a couple of times. I mean, you know, literally, I did. I've done things like that. I jumped from high places when I was young and you know, thought I was, you know, unbreakable.
So, in a sense, you're saying her affair with the young boy is much more a difficult, dangerous, disruptive, whatever, than her affair with
the woman. It's not a matter of
the
opinion.
Woman,
no,
which
wait,
is fact. More socially it's not a matter acceptable.
Of I beg your pardon? What's socially? No, you're misunderstanding me completely.
Okay. Yeah. Straight.
No, you know in Western culture.
Yes.
If you have sex with anybody under a legal age.
Okay. Right.
There is no redemption.
Right.
And if it's a tabloid-driven frenzy of a national scale, you're fucked.
Right.
Do you see? And everyone else is fucked also forever.
Yeah.
That's what I'm.
If I were king, I would give forgiveness to older women. I said to the director that I think it's one of the most joyous things that a 15-year-old boy could possibly encounter would be to have something like this happen. It's truly something to get down on your knees and be grateful for every day. And if the society turns around, as you just said, appropriately, I totally agree.
I just repeat the law and the circumstances. Yeah. That's what happens. Right. The law has it down, and I'm quite comfortable with the law.
Yeah.
Well, how much do you think should be put at the feet of the media? You know, especially when you look at Mary Kay Letourneau and all of the other sort of cases which have come up of late, they've turned it into kind of a circus without very much ability for those people to go through their own sort of...
I'm not familiar with that case, really. I'm afraid I'm not... I'm just not familiar with it, I'm a bit out of touch. Truly, I don't really know.
American,
I don't know the
soccer.
No, not particularly. I just don't watch. I only watch the soccer these days. Honestly, I promise you. I mean, it's all I do. I've got it down. I'm too old. I can't take it. I can't take the news. Is too rich for me now. I can't. It's too strident. It's too complicated. And I'm not clever enough. I can't take anymore. I put in some hours. I did my time. You know, I used to be addicted to, you know, what's happening, you know, and kind of the details of other people's lives. But I'm over it now. I am passionately involved in soccer, what you call soccer, which is, of course, in fact, football. But you stole the title for this other game in which you cheat and pick up the ball and run with it.
Do you listen to and enjoy old Dylan?
I listen to Bob Dylan every day of my life. I would be adrift without Bob Dylan. I'm lost without him. If I get the blues, I go to Bob. If I'm happy, I go to Bob. Bob explains everything for me. He is the single most important artist in my life. I can't imagine a world or my life without him. I've just been listening to him now. I bought in Barnes & Noble. They have a really satisfying disc, which is their compilation. They call it Bob Dylan's Blues, and it's all the kind of most directly based blues songs. It's a beautiful collection, and I bought it yesterday, and I've been playing it in the room. It brings me such joy. Very few things do. Soccer and Bob and the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones, obviously. I very rarely go a day without I listen to the Rolling Stones.
You haven't been down to the Morgan Library to that?
I have. I went. It's a brilliant exhibit. I loved all of it. I particularly like the booths for each album. And you could go into booths as you go, and you press a button, and you get whatever track from them. And I think it's really great, and you were really bored. I can tell because you don't like Moana. No. Do you like Bob? Not really.
It's a generation. David, here is the line in the Vertical Hour.
I know, and I think it was. I mean, I do like to think that may be the only line in the whole play that I had some. I didn't say you should put that in. But he was very. When he gave me, it was a rewrite. Yeah. And he needed another line, and he put it in. And when he put it in, he did sort of have a particular grin on his face, as if to say, "Well, here you are. You know, now you get to say. You know, you get to mention. You get to mention Dylan's name. And of course, we have his music." Is used in the show. I walk on to the opening chords of Simple Twist of Fate from Blood on the Tracks. And every day I walk on, the very first time we did it, because I was so scared, the first preview, to cheer myself up when I come up the stairs to start the show, I said to myself, I can't believe I come on to this tune. And now, because I'm superstitious and I have to say it every time I come on. So every time I walk up the stairs, I make myself say, I have never come up the stairs and not said, I can't believe I come on to this tune. Because I figure the day that I don't say it, you know, my trousers will fall down.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. God bless. I won't read. I'll go like this.
Thank you.
Thanks.